Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. Dave Brubeck died this week. A titan in the field of jazz, he, along with his brilliant quartet and the immortal Take Five, written by saxophonist Paul Desmond, lit up the charts and the ears of listeners from the hallowed jazz clubs of Greenwich Village to Carnegie Hall. The unmistakable sound of the group demanded attention, and the three-legged beat, although borrowed from Eastern music, was fresh and exciting. I had the great opportunity of speaking with the maestro in November of 2003 when he came out with what he termed a classical work released on the Telarc label as Classical Brubeck. He didn't really cross over. He just made music differently, paying homage to the tradition of classical liturgical forms in his Pange Lingua variations, borrowing from the Latin texts. His brother Howard's work, Dialogues for Jazz Combo and Orchestra, which the group performed with the New York Philharmonic, Leonard Bernstein conducting, was a featured segment on the Bernstein on Jazz series, What is Jazz? He tried his hand at a cantata, exploring form just as Johann Sebastian Bach did, and continued pushing the boundaries of jazz to include and justify the total meaning of all musics. We're here today with Dave Brubeck, an artist known to many as a jazz musician, and to new listeners, a composer of classical works as well. Welcome to Crossover, Mr. Dave Brubeck.
Thank you.
I must say, after listening to your newest album, Classical Brubeck, the word exciting kept coming to mind. Always exciting, really. It's really quite wonderful. And I thought perhaps we could talk about it a little bit in context with your past career. I just want to ask you, for someone who couldn't read music, you've come quite far. This has been said that you never really learned how to read music. Is that true?
Yeah, but I could write music.
What did you play by ear? Was that it?
I guess you'd call it that. I played.
You sure did. But you had a fantastic career. You never really wanted to be a musician in the early years, did you?
Well, I wanted to be a cattleman.
Uh-huh. What changed your mind?
When I went to college, I was pre-med, thinking of going on to veterinary school. In the conservatory, was across the lawn from the zoology lab, and the professor said, Brubeck, go over there. Next year, your mind is not here. So I did that.
But you had musicians in the family, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Great musicians.
Your mother taught you music, is that right?
Well, she tried, and she did by example. She could play all of Chopin and a lot of Bach, Debussy, Ravel.
But you also, didn't you tinkle around on the piano at a very young age?
Oh, sure. I always was playing from the time I was four.
I'm sure she must have recognized the talent in you, but she couldn't convince you, could she?
That's about it, yeah.
So then you grew up and you went to college, and they told you you'd better switch out of the pre-med course. And you started, of course, a phenomenal career, which is legend to, I guess, many of our listeners. But today we're going to really talk about this whole other direction that you went in. When did you start composing what we would call classical music?
I'd have to guess, but my first big oratorio, which was 70 minutes long, was recorded by Eric Kunzel in the Cincinnati Symphony, and
yes,
that was 1968, I think.
And what was the name of that?
The Light in the Wilderness, and it was on Decca Records, and now it's on a small label, a mail label, where you have to write to it.
Mm-hmm. Was that commissioned, or was that something that just you were inspired to write?
I think, I had started writing it and was well into it when Kunzel first saw it. He came to my house to talk about his first Pops concert. He's the biggest seller in Pop Symphony.
He's absolutely fantastic, and the newest albums that he's done and the arrangements are really out of this world. But
you see, his first Pops concert was me.
And oh, really?
He came to my house and wanted to meet me and talk over a Pops concert. Because he was new at that.
Mm-hmm.
He was a classical conductor. But
right,
they wanted him to do Pops. And so he chose me as his first artist. And when he was at my house, he saw manuscript on the piano of this new oratorio. And he said, when you finish it, I'd like to play it with the Cincinnati Symphony and record it. And it went over so well and got great reviews in Washington Post and many other magazines and papers. And then we went to Europe and with the Cincinnati Symphony and 100 of the choral students from Miami University and Oxford, Ohio. So those students got to tour Europe when they were still in school, and we got great reviews in France and Vienna and places like that.
But it seems that all of your classical work is religiously oriented. And I wondered, was that something that you, well, I guess, was it kind of a calling for you? I mean, you know, you can write classical music or go that way, but it seems that everything that you've done is religious.
Well, there are pieces like Elementals that you could play where it's a jazz band and a symphony orchestra combined. And that was commissioned by Eastman School of Music. And we do play that in quite a few universities. And we've played it with the London Symphony. In fact, our last broadcast with the London Symphony, we played Elementals. And I think we'll do it again this year with the London Symphony. And it's really a jazz-oriented piece. And then you can go back to the piece we recorded with Leonard Bernstein, which has just been reissued by the Bernstein family. And it's called Dialogue for Jazz Combo and Symphony Orchestra. And that was written by my brother Howard. And in 1956, we're kind of the first to combine improvised jazz with symphony music.
You're listening to Crossover. Our guest today is Dave Brubeck. You know, in the old days, in early church music, there were what they called rules for liturgical writing. There was sacred writing, and then there was what they called profane music. I wondered how you felt about the use of jazz within the liturgical text. Music is music is music, but somehow, are there certain rules, would you say? I mean, is the genre separate? Are they separate? Is classical separate from jazz at some point intellectually?
Yeah. That's a good question, and one that I will address in a radical way just in order to shake you up and your listeners.
Good.
What I did was tame compared to what Bach had done 300 years before. Bach, his most famous, you can't call it an aria, but a theme, is "O Sacred Head, Now Wounded." Where do you think that came from?
Well, you tell me.
A drinking song that everybody in the congregation knew.
That's very interesting.
It's not only interesting, it's true.
Well, Bach, and, of course, had to write something new every week, didn't he? He was a very prolific.
He could do it. You know, he was that unbelievable talent. But the point I'm trying to make is if I use jazz, it's tame alongside of Bach using a drinking song.
But the world was, well, nothing changes. I mean, people remain the same and life remains the same, but the world was different then. And I guess people were not as sophisticated. And perhaps he felt that something that was familiar to the public would work better within the sacred environment, as it were. But nowadays, I mean, what you've done, and of course, I think, frankly, in the new album, this Tongues of Fire is one of the most exciting. I think that's what it is, Tongues of Fire.
Oh, yeah.
Is absolutely one of the most exciting things. And you incorporate a lot of things in there, and somehow it's very cohesive and it all works together. But I see a lot of influences like what you said. I mean, even Carl Orff did it with the Carmen of Burana, you know, with the taking the old songs and kind of putting them to Latin text and mixing it up, you know.
And they were bawdy songs.
They were very bawdy songs, yes.
And that's why I say what I did is tame alongside of some of these classical composers.
Well, have you gotten any reaction from people who are used to the standard text and, you know, the classical framework? I mean, have people said, oh, you shouldn't be playing that or you shouldn't be doing that, it doesn't belong there, it's sacrilegious? Have you ever gotten that kind of a reaction?
Not with good choral conductors. You know, my music is being sung all over the world, not the world, but all over Europe, and we just recorded it in Moscow with the Russian National Orchestra and the Orlov Choir.
Yes.
And then on this tour, I'm leaving Saturday, we'll be playing in Budapest and Vienna. We've done my Mass in Vienna, and we've done the Easter Oratorio, Beloved Son, in Vienna.
Yes, yes.
And we're going back to the festival in Austria next summer. And my music is accepted. After all, St. Stephen's were Mozart and Beethoven.
Right.
And this last Easter, there were four nights. They have religious music all of Easter, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And I was in company with Beethoven and Mozart. And
rather daunting, I would say.
Yeah, so you see, if you're put in that framework, you're accepted, or else whoever is doing it is going to be in big trouble.
We've just heard the first of the Panjé Lingua variations by Dave Brubeck, sung by the London Voices and the London Oratorio School Schola, with the London Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Russell Gloyd. You're listening to Crossover. Our guest today is Dave Brubeck.
How do you feel if your works stand alone without the jazz improvisational sections?
Great.
I mean, yes.
The improvisational section of The Light in the Wilderness was not done at the premiere, which was done before Cincinnati, because I didn't want people to say it was a jazz oratorio.
Mm-hmm.
I sat there through two performances and just listened. And it got a wonderful review in Time magazine. And there was no improvisation, because I knew they were just going to say jazz improvisation.
Right.
And they wouldn't even really listen.
Well,
I mean, when you make a remark like that, I know you haven't listened to the music.
Oh, I listened real well, and I was going to say, how do you classify yourself? I mean, you're certainly not contemporary, dissonant, and iconoclastic in a way in your what we would call your classical composition. I'm not talking about the jazz improvisation. I'm talking about the work that you write for the chorus. A lot of it has a gospel influence in it. I just wondered, it's very classical. I mean, the way your writing is very, very classical, but it's accessible. It kind of reminds me a lot of Randall Thompson in some ways. It's wonderful. You're listening to Crossover. Our guest today is Dave Brubeck. And I'm saying this with all due respect, but the jazz improvisation is improvisation, and it's different every time, isn't it, when you play?
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's different every time. Yep.
So it kind of, in a way, it becomes segmented, and you don't quite know what you're going to do at the time. And I want to know, do you think of it as a separate entity, or how do you draw your inspiration when you're improvising? Because the classical part of it, well, I shouldn't really stratify it that way, but the part of it that is sung by the chorus and the soloist and so on remains the same. I mean, that's something that you have composed, or you have put on paper, and that's they do, right. But then you come in and you are probably newly inspired each time you play. And I was wondering, What do you draw on? I mean, it's very, very interesting as a musician how you react to this each time anew.
Oh, yes. You see, again, the tradition goes back hundreds of years. Bach improvised every Sunday in church.
Yes, of course.
And then almost every great organist that I know, mostly church organists, are marvelous improvisers.
Yes, of course.
And one of them just passed away 2 weeks ago, a great friend of mine who was the organist at the National Cathedral in Washington.
Yes.
The first time I met him, he came to my jazz concert, and he said, after the concert, he said, you know, I love your improvisations, would you like to hear me improvise? And I said, well, what do you mean? And he said, well, come next door and I'll improvise for you. I didn't know he was going to open the National Cathedral and go in total darkness and then start improvising. His name was Richard Dirksen. And so many of my friends that are great organists are some of the best improvisers I've ever heard.
Yes, well, I think so. I think the history, of course, of organ, I mean, Bach wrote a figured bass, you know, they would improvise on the chords and do all kinds of things. But what I'm talking about is you're improvising in jazz, and the basis of your music in that particular frame of reference is a classical style, and that's what I'm saying. It's really, again, do you think they're separate genres that can be put together and say the same thing?
Oh, well, you see, this is a long question for me to answer. But you mentioned Bach and the figured bass.
Right.
That's close to the way we work as jazz musicians.
Yes.
And Darius Milhaud, who was my teacher, said, never lose the jazz tradition. If you want to express your environment, your American culture, and the composers that are the greatest, this was 1946,
mm-hmm.
he said, are Duke Ellington and George Gershwin. That's your two top American composers. And then the ones that use the jazz idiom are going to be outstanding, like Charles Ives, Bernstein and Copland.
Right.
He said, they'll be the ones that live. You watch and see. And
well, he was using jazz mio in the very early part of the 20th century in the creation of the world.
To be the first one.
Yes, of course, yeah.
Yeah, and then Ravel and Debussy.
Debussy, of course, yeah. And Stravinsky did too. As well,
oh,
I think,
boy.
Yeah. And how.
So beautifully.
But again, what I'm saying, it's very separate. You have your statement with your vocalist and your soloist and your chorus, and then you come in and you do your thing, which is very beautiful. And I mean, it's wonderful and very lyrical in many places. But it's really, for a listener, I'm just wondering, have you been questioned again, as I said, that this doesn't belong there? People accept it. They love it. Is that right?
So far, yeah. And you know, this recording is really getting out there.
I found especially the voice of the Holy Spirit terribly exciting and beautiful.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm so glad you did. You know, when they're all speaking in tongues, like,
yes,
like they did at Pentecost.
Wonderful. It's wonderful what you did there.
I used 12 different languages.
Yes. Sounds like a night in Tunisia. It's really that particular work on the entire album was the one that really spoke to me, I guess, and to pardon the pun, it really did. And you used everything, and then the wonderful, oh, when you went into the jazz improvisation, it was really, really exciting. I think that was a marvelous, marvelous piece.
Well, it's my favorite piece of the three oratorio types.
Sure.
We've just heard excerpts from the exciting Tongues of Fire, Voice of the Holy Spirit by Dave Brubeck. Soloist Alan Opie Baritone performed with the London Symphony Orchestra and the London Voices and London Oratorio School Schola, conducted by Russell Gloyd. The Dave Brubeck Quartet consisted of Dave at the piano, Bobby Militello on sax and flute, Michael Moore bass, and Randy Jones drums. And you're listening to Crossover with our guest today, Dave Brubeck.
What music turns you on in the classical?
Oh, I love Bach and Beethoven. I love Bartok and almost everything.
But I mean, that touches you. Is there anything you can think of offhand that really turns, you know, makes you feel that way?
Last night I was listening to Petrushka, and I was found myself yelling and screaming for joy.
Yeah.
Because I remember that piece so well. And I just heard Villa-Lobos.
Yes.
I'm doing a piece with the Yale cellos with Aldo Paraso.
Yes, Paraso, yes.
And he did my piece, The Regret, that's on that recording with the London Symphony, and he did it with the Yale cellos.
I just was going to ask you about that piece. Explain the title, please.
It just hit me to write that piece, and regret was running through my mind. And it's just a total of everything. The thing I regret the most is World War II. You know, 60 million people died.
Yes.
That's something to regret, that civilization can't get itself together because we have the spiritual way of living and we have the destructive way. And I devote a lot of my time to trying to get a spiritual text that will help in my own way to bring peace.
Yes. Do you have any personal regret that is used or referred to in that?
Oh, just so many things, you know. At my age, there's hardly a week goes by that one of my close friends didn't die.
Yes.
And you regret all that. And I'm not exaggerating. I'm going to be 83 soon. And
you're still touring, huh?
Oh, I'm getting ready to go, and I just got home.
That's the answer, you know, they say, to staying young. Keep active. Well, you have given so much to so many, and I just want to thank you, Dave Brubeck. This latest gift that you have given us in the form of classical Brubeck is something very, very special, and we hope that you will be well and that you will continue to spread the word musically and otherwise. And we thank you for joining us on Crossover today.
Well, I appreciate you liking the piece that I like the most. But there's so many more, and we're trying to get them all recorded.
Will they become available, you think?
There's two in the can now. One will come out in January, and another one soon. So I'm working hard.
Well, you work hard, but not so hard that you won't be around. So.
Okay. thanks for you and your listeners, and I really appreciate it.
It's been wonderful speaking with you, and you have a wonderful family as well, and you're very, very lucky with that.
So. Oh, yes.
Thanks again.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group, Incorporated. Thanks for listening.